direct from the entertainment capital of the world, fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. It's Jerry Pippin with entertainment news, views, and interviews.
Go away, winter, spring, summer, or fall, Las Vegas has got it all.
We call the Las Vegas Strip the Street of Dreams for several reasons. When one walks down Las Vegas Boulevard, the overall ambience of the place is overpowering. It's unreal. The huge resorts lining both sides of the street. And the dream-like quality of the neon at night is overwhelming. But for those of us who have worked, played, and lived in Las Vegas over the decades, the mystique of the ghost of those places that no longer exist, still charged through the back roads of our mind. The Sands, the Desert Inn, the Frontier, and up the street, the old Aladdin. For a short while, way back in 1995, I lived in the penthouse of the Jockey Club. That was the condominiums across the street. Now it's gone. And even back then, when I was there, I could see that the strip was changing. And the Jockey Club would soon be history. The strip was morphing into an extravagant place with nothing too big to duplicate. The fountains of the Bellagio were ready to dance with the music. Every time you went down the strip, you wondered how many high-rise buildings could be squeezed into the spaces for each of those major resorts. Unbelievable buildings cropped up around the Caesar's Palace and the Flamingo and so on and so forth. Later in the program, we're going to do some Las Vegas memories built around the Stardust Hotel, the subject of that 1995 movie Casino. We're going to be talking with Las Vegas resident Kathy Scott about the mob history of the place. And then our memories will turn to the second segment of our tribute to the Platters. The Platters made Las Vegas their home after being established in the 50s from Los Angeles as a major rock and roll soft rock group. However, before we do any of this, let's check the entertainment scene this week in Las Vegas. The big news is opening January 15th and running through January 29th. It's Tom Jones. He's at the Hollywood Theater at the MGM Grand. Tom Jones has been a sex symbol for over four decades, and he still packs them in. Here's Tom Jones to prove he's still active as a sex symbol with a song that was a recent hit in England.
Baby, take off your coat. Real slow. Shoes. I'll help you take off your shoes. Baby, take off your dress. Yes, yes, yes. You can leave your hat on. You can leave your hat on. You can leave. All the lights. Come back here. Stand on that chair. Ooh, baby. That's right. Raise your arms in the air. Now shake them. You give me reason to live. You give me reason to live. You give me reason to live. You give me reason to live.
You can live. suspicious minds are talking. They're trying to tear us apart.
They don't believe in this love of mine.
They don't know what love is.
Tom Jones, yeah. He'll be at the MGM Grand at the Hollywood Theater through the 29th. On the show tonight, we're going to do a lot of Las Vegas memories. I noticed, by the way, speaking of that, that the Dunes Hotel employees are having a big reunion Saturday night at the New York City Bar and Grill. That's on Spring Mountain Road. It's their 16th anniversary. The Dunes Hotel closed January 26, 1993, after Steve Wynn bought the property to put up the Bellagio. One of the main claims to fame for the Dunes was the fact that its main showroom was the first to have topless showgirls. Actually, I saw my first topless showgirl at the old Stardust back in the 60s. Coming up, we're going to take a look back at the history of this hotel, the Stardust, with Kathy Scott, well-known Las Vegas author. When you talk about the Stardust, it has a fond memory for the professional gambler. The Stardust was king for this group of people.
Gambling in Laughlin, playing a game called Pie Gal.
Yeah.
With a dealer who made it a lot of fun. He made the table fun for everyone at the table. And one day I went in to play, and he informed me it was his last shift. When I asked him why, he very proudly told me he'd been hired by the Stardust. Spent quite a bit of time with me and explained that as a dealer, the Stardust was considered the epitome of casinos, and it was an honor to be hired by the Stardust.
That was former high roller and now retired Jerry Wilhite, remembering the Stardust.
I think I ever really had a bad one at the Stardust. It was very professionally run.
More Stardust memories coming right up. Marvelous Marv Grand Canyon Tours offers you a unique look at one of the great wonders of the world, the Grand Canyon.
Been at the Grand Canyon area most of my life, so pretty much grew up in the area and know quite a few things that the common tourist doesn't know. And I need to avoid all the people and stuff and try to take them to secluded areas.
A day excursion, personally, conducted by Marvelous Mar.
Yeah, we started about 8 o'clock in the morning. We're done about 4:30. Absolutely. And I have a little photo CD disc for him with 1,000 of my favorite pictures and some video. And
no other tour offers so much, and no other personalized tour offers a better price.
No, I'm still the same, and I'm the most reasonable price tour of the Grand Canyon now. $85 a person. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Call 928-707-0291 or check him out at MarvelousMarv.com.
I was a hell of a handicapper, I can tell you that. I had it down so good that I ran paradise on earth. I had one of the biggest casinos in Las Vegas to run.
A little bit of the soundtrack from the motion picture Casino, the 1995 movie, about what most people say was the Stardust. Hello, welcome back to the Las Vegas Radio Show. We have Kathy Scott with us. She is a Las Vegas-based true crime writer and has written a book about the hole-in-the-wall gang, the people who ran the Stardust. Kathy, since 1958, the Stardust has been, around until they tore it down. It was quite the place. Pretty remarkable, huh? Welcome to the show.
And yeah, it was something. It actually, the mob took it over, of course, but it actually grossed. It was the largest skim, and I don't know if a lot of people know this, but it was the largest skim out of all the hotels that were being skimmed, 5-6 of them by the mob. It took in the most, or took out the most. There's supposed to be a tunnel under it.
Oh, really?
Right, for Filatro and Lefty Rosenthal and Herbie Blitzstein and those guys, if the feds came in to, raid or do whatever they were going to do, they could escape through the basement, out a door and out a tunnel that was similar to a storm drain.
Yeah, Harry Reid had an incident there once. While he was having lunch, they blew up his car.
Mr. Cleanface, Harry Reid?
Yes. He was the DA at the time there in Las Vegas.
At the Stardust, yeah. He rubbed elbows with those guys quite a bit back then.
Yeah, in fact, he basically said to them, that he was that he couldn't be intimidated or something, and the story goes they blew up his car while he was having lunch, I guess to intimidate him. I don't know. You wrote a book, and it's called Fat Herbie and the Hole-in-Wall Gang, The Rise and Fall of a Vegas Mobster. And you've done a lot of research on that, and that's one reason we wanted you on the show to talk about. We've done shows in the past about Tony Spilotto, the enforcer, and his ice pick, and he was not a nice man.
People liked him, though. I mean, he was tough when it came to business, but actually, they liked him. His sidekick, though, however, I mean, he was his. Everybody called him his right-hand man, his top lieutenant, Herbie Blitzstein. And, whenever you see photos of Spilotro going in and out of the courthouse with Oscar Goodman, his attorney at the time, Herbie is always in all those photos. I mean, he sat outside the courtroom the entire time during the hole-in-the-wall gang trial in 1986-85.
Well, tell me a little bit about that trial. What was
those guys had been, it's just interesting because I'm interviewing a lot of FBI agents, former and current, but the guys who were involved in, underworld crime investigations. And, they like to say that they brought down the mob. They could not get those guys. They followed them. They surveilled them. They wiretapped their homes, the jewelry store they used as a front. And they could not get those guys for years. And they were called the hole-in-the-wall gang. I mean, Spilotro and Herbie, they were brought in to kind of make sure as enforcers that Lefty Rosenthal could continue the skim, at mostly the Stardust. At the Stardust, the money went straight to Chicago. It didn't go to Kansas City and then to Chicago. And it was a big skim. So, but on the side, they opened up the Gold Rush Jewelry Store, and it was a front for fencing.
And where was the jewelry store located?
On Sahara Avenue, just west of the Las Vegas Strip, close to Circus Circus, actually. You know where?
Yeah, which is not too far from Stardust.
Right, real close to the Stardust, and he actually, you know, had a store there, a gift store inside. Pilatro did inside Circus Circus at one point, which of course was a front. It's just a place to be that gives them an excuse to go inside, so that they can watch over all the skin. But so they opened this jewelry store, and it was a front for fencing, and they were hooked up with. And it was John Spilatro, Herbie Blitzstein, and Tony Spilatro, and they all from Chicago, and they had relationships with maitre d's and insurance agents, and the maitre d's would let them know, or the valets, when, you know, somebody with a big house and a big safe was having dinner, and then they'd head over to the house. Mm-hmm. They burglarize it, and they'd go through the ceiling, through the roof, by punching a hole or on the side. They even went so far as renting a store so they could, you know, a storefront, so they could punch a hole into the business next door, go in and burglarize. They could not get those guys for anything. And the night they finally did a bust on July 4th, 1980, 81, 80 or 81, I'm sorry, I think it was 80. They, Dan and Tony weren't there that night. They, you know, they organized it, but they weren't there. So the mob, so the Fed still couldn't get the key guys, and they got six burglars and eventually scared the bejesus out of, Frank Collada, and he turned state's evidence, and that's how they got them. But it was a federal case, but they still couldn't get them. I mean, it was, the mob that finally got Spilatro, and it was, on Herbie Blitzstein a year after, 86 when Spilatro died, a year after that, the only thing they could get Herbie on was IRS evasion.
On tax evasion.
Tax evasion, and a little embezzlement, maybe, but I think that was small time stuff. And
well,
getting murdered too by wannabe mobsters, but very low level mobsters. So it was, in the end, it was the mob who got them, not the Fed.
Yeah. Now when we talk about these guys, and let's get back to the Stardust a minute. It was a huge cash cow for the mob. It went to Chicago, as you said. I'd always heard about the Kansas City thing, but you say it goes straight to Chicago, huh?
The other skims would go to Kansas City and then be distributed to the other families, because obviously this was an open city, you know, for other mob families besides Chicago, and they shared the wealth, so to speak. But Chicago ran it, but the skim from the Stardust went straight to Chicago. And it was, and the feds, I don't believe, ever found out who the bag man was, who actually carried that money to Chicago. With everything they listened to and everything they did, those guys were smart. They had their own electronic surveillance inside the Gold Rush, and it took them years to get them. And then when they did, they still didn't get the key players. Herbie Blitzstein's attorney was able to get him out of the indictment, and Spilatro was still in it, and it was a mistrial. And then when it, in 85, 86, it was a mistrial, and it was going to go to a new trial, and Tony got dead instead.
Yeah, he mysteriously turned up dead.
Turned up dead
Was that a traditional mafia hit?
He and his brother were buried alive, and the only reason Michael Spilatro was killed was because he happened to be with Tony when Tony was called.
When you're called to those meetings, you're right. You're probably the guy who was thinking, well, is this going to be it, or is this a good deal? I mean, they don't know, right?
That was Herbie and Spilatro's primary task, was to control casino owners at the Stardust and the personnel, and to, you know, over the ones involved in the skim and embezzlement. But in 1984, and this is an interesting fact, in 1984, the Nevada Gaming Commission gave the highest fine ever issued in Nevada history, with a $3 million fine against the Stardust for skimming, which is major at the time.
Do you have any idea how much money the mob took out of the Stardust over the years?
Well, I mean, it was in the millions.
No, it had to be.
But no, I don't know the, I've heard figures, you know, being bandied about, but it was a large amount of money. Enough so that there were reports, you know, coming out of the so-called owners, you know, of the Stardust, that they actually were losing money. They were skimming so much that the hotel was losing money. You know, but it was a very lucrative place. And
I remember some video that surfaced showing them skimming at the Stardust in a trial. When they literally were taking, you know, the little pieces of the pie and putting in a dish.
Yeah, one for me, or one for the hotel.
Three for me, right. Not even two, usually. who technically owned the Stardust? Do you remember?
Well, the Boyd Group didn't buy it until, 1980? I don't think it was owned by...
They had some interesting people involved in it. In fact, I think a doorman at one time, Wilbur Clark down at the Desert Inn, was a doorman. And I think something very similar at the Stardust. We'll check into that.
Yeah, and I'm not. I'm sorry, I don't know who.
Yeah, we'll find out. We'll find.
The Boyd Group has liked to keep a low profile. They don't like to, you know. It's just like the implosion. You know, is going very quietly. There hasn't been a lot of publicity about it, and you know, it's. You know, there. I imagine it'll be felt throughout the valley because it'll be like a bomb going off. But it's. Not like they do the fanfare. I mean, when the dunes went down, he did a little documentary on it.
Oh yeah, there was a TV show built around it.
Yeah, not a very good one. But
no, it wasn't. It was just kind of thrown together.
But it was and the dunes, of course, and the unfortunate thing with the dunes, and it of course was mobbed up too. But the unfortunate thing with the dunes was the dune sign, kind of that. Dewdrop or whatever this, you know, it was a weird, weird shaped sign. It went down with it. They imploded. It all started with the Las Vegas Country Club and the tower there, the Regency Tower, and that was in the 70s. And Spilotro had a place there. He rented it actually from from Joey Cusimano at the time, and they actually part of the hole in the wall gangs. Deal was they actually burglarized homes within the Las Vegas Country Club. And they'd find out from insurance agents, you know, and then they'd go in, you know, what they had, what they were insuring.
So basically...
Go in but that concept of living in condos is has really taken off.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
High-rise condos, Turnberry and...
They're across from Circus and up from Sahara. That's a great complex.
Yeah, they're building more. They're building them on... They're building them on the west side of town near, there's a Suncoast Casino up here that they're building. It looks just like the Turnberry, so I'm sure Turnberry Towers, I think, has three or four. And, that's near Desert Inn Road, but it's, yeah, they're doing more living and working on, in sort of, they're trying to turn it into like a cosmopolitan, metropolitan area, which of course Vegas hasn't been. It used to be very Sleepy Hollow, and people live in the suburbs. But they're now getting to that sort of metropolitan type city, and you know, multi-use, which is what they're doing with.
Now, when we talk about Joe. When we talk about Herbie, I guess let's talk about him, because that's the focus of your book, Herbie.
Well, it's the hole in the wall gang, all those guys, yeah. and Herbie and his background,
yeah.
Coming from the Chicago mob,
You've alluded twice that they were into burglaries, and I consider that kind of small town or small time stuff.
No, they got hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars of jewels. That was their big thing, was jewelry and cash. And people had safes, and the richest people in Las Vegas are the ones that they were burglarizing their homes. They also got caught burglarizing a jewelry store, Bertha's jewelry store, and millions of dollars worth of jewels. And that was their, so it wasn't small time at all. And then they fenced it back in Chicago. And it sort of supplemented their scam.
Yeah, so, in other words, the mob in Chicago probably got the bulk of the money from the scam. But I wonder how they divided up the others. Was it this Herbie and the rest of them, Tony's own private little nest?
Yeah, I think it was their private stash. Uh-huh. They may, and I think that's what got them in trouble, too. But, you know, my understanding was the mob did know about it when they started, and their thing was, you know, if you're going to do something like that, we don't want to know about it. It's separate from us.
Yeah.
And so they, and because that heat was coming down on the Stardust, like in 1984, when they, you know, the Stardust was fined $3 million, which is major at the time, and those guys were skimming, you know, Rosenthal was skimming for Chicago, and, you know, and Filatro and Blitzstein, they were the enforcers to make sure that everybody kept in line and continued to skim. But that was 84. They got caught in the burglary thing in 81, so they had started it before that, and then the trial was 86. But, yeah, the skims were, casinos were becoming more legitimate.
Yeah, by the 90s, the mob was pretty well, I don't know that they'd be forced out. I guess they just
into other enterprises,
right?
And they're in. I mean, the Crazy Horse too. You know, they you know.
This is a topless place. It's quite.
They were indicted. You know, mm-hmm. the owner for having mob ties and racketeering and the escort services, any of the skin places, the topless places. You know, supposedly they're mob controlled. So all they did was just change their enterprises and moved out of the casinos and into other businesses, which they've been, you know, involved in prostitution for a long time. I mean, basically the escort services are prostitution, and here in Las Vegas they are and have been very lucrative business. And you don't see, as far as the escort services, that the higher-end escorts going into hotels, big hotels on the Las Vegas Strip. I don't know. I don't see those girls being arrested. But you see a lot of street arrests of prostitutes. And I don't know, maybe it interferes with that bigger enterprise that goes in the hotels. But you can't tell me the hotel owners don't know that that's going on.
Yeah. Investigative reporter extraordinaire Kathy Scott. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back with Kathy. And then we're going to talk to Gene Bennett, manager of the Platters, again, as we continue to tell the story of the Platters from Las Vegas. Don't go away. Why visit the Grand Canyon in Arizona? Marv Mason knows why.
Mainly because the Grand Canyon is known as one of the seven natural wonders of the world.
No one gives a more personalized tour or knows more about the Grand Canyon than Marvelous Marv.
My main thing is education on the geology, because the Grand Canyon is a life record. It shows us where we were at one time on the planet with the continental drift and all the layers that were laid down by sediments, and then how the canyon was carved. And, of course, the views, you know, a picture doesn't do it justice. But it's nice to have somebody there tell you about it that's lived there.
It's the best way to tour the Grand Canyon. Marv picks you up in a modern van at your hotel in the Grand Canyon area and takes you on a day-long tour. Contact Marvelous Marv Vacation Tours. Call and talk to him personally, 928-707-0291, or visit his website, MarvelousMarv.com.